Welcome, welcome, welcome to LNL, dear listeners. I'm broadcasting tonight from the Muswellbrook Studios in the Upper Hunter, the epicentre of climate change gases, not only in Australia, but pretty much for everywhere in the world. Tonight we're going to be looking at Franco's butchery after the Civil War, as much as during it. We're going to be looking at the detention, torture, forced disappearance, physical elimination of thousands of people for political and ideological motives. And it's, I think, being properly quantified pretty much for the first time by my guest. We're also going to end the week with a romp through the sex lives of kings and princes of Great Britain for the past 300 years, including the likes of Lily Langtry, Jenny Churchill, Wallace Simpson, Camilla Parker Bowles, and perhaps our own Australian lass, Dale Harper, who preceded Parker Bowles as Prince Charles's mistress. But first, the most important issue at the moment is, of course, what's happening to Julian Assange. Now got 13 days in which to apply to Britain's Supreme Court to have proceedings in his case reopened. By no means a sure thing, and if the court doesn't allow the case to be reopened, his only other legal option seems to be appealing to the European Court of Human Rights before extradition to Sweden. So, we'll talk to my old friend John Pilger, veteran journalist, award-winning filmmaker, activist, in just a minute, from London. And but let me declare an interest. I accepted Julian's request to be the Australian member of the advisory board way back when WikiLeaks was but a gleam in his eye, and I still remain a wholehearted supporter. John, first of all, how much attention is being paid to the plight of Assange in the UK?
Well, I think there's a lot of a great deal of interest here, Philip. It's such an important case because there are a number of other extradition cases heading towards the United States unless something happens. And at the moment, several of them have been stopped by the European Court because the European Court has said that there's a great danger of these people going into, and I paraphrase them, of course, into the same sort of hellholes that Bradley Manning has endured. And so these extradition cases to the US, not all of them, are frozen, of course. And that's the real, that's the long game, if I could call it that here, that it's whether or not Julian Assange wins here, there is that still that threat that he be extradited from the UK to the US. In Sweden, the threat is much greater because there is a deal between the Swedish authorities and the US called temporary surrender, under which he could be sent on. That doesn't mean to say he will be, but that's certainly a prospect.
Well, of course, you'll be delighted to know that the ambassador, US ambassador to Australia, has told ABC Radio this very morning that the US isn't interested in extraditing Assange. In fact, he said that it's not something the US cares about. Your reaction to that, yeah, Mr. P?
What's that expression, forked tongue, wasn't it? Because the very same ambassador said, and I paraphrase him too, that the extradition laws in Australia might well have to be looked at. And indeed, the Gillard government has looked at them, and there is now quite a disgraceful thing called a WikiLeaks amendment. They've taken out the so-called terrorism or political element in the conditions to extradite an Australian citizen to fit in very nicely with the requests of the US. And we know, I don't say that tendentiously, we know that because Freedom of Information, thanks to a journalist on the Sydney Morning Herald has been throwing up these truths of collusion between the Gillard government and Washington in the possibility of Julian Assange ending up being prosecuted. Now, let's get this right. This is a whistleblower, and the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution protects whistleblowers, but not under the Obama administration. What we do know, and this has come out from these leaks, is that the U.S. has concocted a prosecution, a sealed indictment, formulated during the secret sitting of a grand jury in Washington, and we know that's awaiting Assange if, by whichever way, he ends up in the US.
I note that you've said that one of the achievements of the Obama presidency has been to, quote, silence the anti-war and social justice movement associated with the Democratic Party. How and what, and probably as intriguingly, why?
Well, the why is no mystery to me, Philip. It's just a U.S. administration, and each U.S. administration is more or less the same as the one before it. I mean, it used to be a difference a long time ago, but not anymore. Obama, in many respects, for instance, he did, for the first time in the history of the presidency, he took on the entire defense establishment of his predecessor, George W. Bush, including the Secretary of State and the whole Pentagon bureaucracy, transferred the whole lot over. This was the outfit that got stuck into Iraq and Afghanistan and the rest. So in many ways, the Obama administration is worse, certainly in terms of truth-telling, whistleblowing. George W. Bush hardly prosecuted any whistleblowers, a couple, I think. Obama has prosecuted more whistleblowers than any president in history.
And let's go back to London and to Assange. You say that the trial by media there is a campaign of character assassination. Is it intense?
Well, it has been. It's not so much at the moment, but it has been. I've never known anything like it. In fact, I was discussing it with Julian Assange's lawyer, the distinguished human rights lawyer, Gareth Pearce, and she said she's never known a case like this, and she's handled all the big miscarriage cases. And we were talking about the character assassination of Julian Assange. Yeah, I don't think it succeeded, but it certainly tried.
And I understand there's been something of similar vehemence in Sweden as well.
Well, yes. I mean, the Swedes have taken the fact that Assange rightly sees great dangers in their country, and they're very complex and contradictory and disturbing judicial and legal system, they've taken it as some sort of slight on the media has anyway. The media has taken it some sort of slight on the national name of Sweden. In fact, what WikiLeaks has done, I mean, you've always got to go back to the cables. Why are these authorities behaving this way? Well, if you look at the cables released about Sweden, they blow apart the very notion of the Swedish elite running a much vaunted neutral country. That's what Sweden's reputation is around the world. Well, it's just not true. The released diplomatic cables show a very close and obsequious relationship with the administrations in Washington. Here we have on this coming Sunday, Hillary Clinton making her first ever trip to Sweden. What a coincidence. In which she'll be discussing the problems of internet warfare or something with Carl Bildt, who was on one of George W. Bush's more extreme committees. We don't want to get into conspiratorial mode here, but, you know, life and politics are a big chessboard, and you move a few pieces around and you get an idea what's going on.
John, whenever I announce that you're coming on the program, I cop a bit of flack, which comes as no surprise to you. But quite a few people have raised this simple issue. Why shouldn't Assange be forced to confront his accusers?
Well, what do you mean? Are we talking,
in other words,
in the Middle Ages or something?
They're talking about due process, the fact that Assange should face the women that have accused him in Sweden.
He's tried to. And that is such a myth. I mean, Assange waited up to 5 weeks in Sweden trying to be questioned by a prosecutor, this particular prosecutor, after the first prosecutor had dismissed most of the allegations against him. He then got permission to leave because he had the business of that we've seen of releasing these war logs here in London. His lawyers then offered to be questioned, that he would be questioned through channels that are absolutely standard. That is, at the embassy, the Metropolitan Police here, have a special facility and so on. There was no question of charges. This was simply questioning, and he'd put himself forward for this. This is the whole nonsense of why doesn't he go back and face his accusers? Well, why hasn't he had the presumption of innocence? Yeah. I've never known in my career anybody to have their presumption of innocence so undermined as Assange's. But now we've moved forward into a different situation, there is a real danger for him. This is a man, you know, who spent 550 days under house arrest, tagged. If this was a charge in Britain, 50% of this would be regarded as a prison sentence already served. And he hasn't been charged with anything.
Okay, in the minutes we've got left, let's go back to Bradley Manning. You make the point that, to your knowledge, no prominent spokesperson for gay rights has spoken against Obama and Biden's hypocrisy in claiming on the one hand to support same-sex marriage whilst terrorising a gay man of conspicuous courage.
Well, I did that in the context of saying that same-sex marriage was a very interesting idea, and it's one that I actually support. I don't believe that there should be legal obstacles to anyone getting married, regardless of their gender, but that I felt that there should be a sense of proportion. And if same-sex marriage is to dominate gay rights, I think that's unfortunate. I think a heroic gay man like Bradley Manning should be right at the top of the list. And whilst I've heard a lot of gay spokespeople speak about the importance of same-sex marriage, I hear very little from them about, as I say, this particularly courageous gay man, Bradley Manning.
Yeah.
That's what I would call an issue, a much more urgent issue than the whole vexed discussion about marriage and property rights and all that. For God's sake, here is a man about to be put away for the rest of his life for telling us great truths.
John, right up to airtime, we were still trying to get Julian to join you on the program, and we'll keep at it next week. You've seen him recently. How is he?
He always amazes me in that he has his spirits, although they plunge. He once described to me the last year as the worst year of his life, and who wouldn't? But his spirits seem to buoy up. I'm not sure how my spirits would be in the same situation. I didn't see him yesterday because he wasn't at court, but I've spoken to him recently, and he was full of plans, and so he's a strong character.
Thanks very much for your time. We'll talk again shortly, and I appreciate you coming on again, John. John Bilger, LNL on RN, and in just a moment it'll be my pleasure, my privilege, to introduce you to Paul Preston to discuss what he calls the Spanish Holocaust.